Hey, everybody, it's Scott. Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. Thank you so much for tuning in yet again. We have a fantastic episode for you today. I'm very excited about it. It was like a little bit of a geek out moment for me, and I'll get to that in just a second. But we're also very excited to work with some of the awesome sponsors that we have on this podcast, and one of them happens to be Manskirt Brewing. Manskirt Brewing is located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, in the old bank building on Main Street. And it's just a great place to grab a craft beer. Go grab a pint, hang out, play some games, listen to music, check out all the new murals on the wall. Always rotating taps of different things, different styles. That's what I really like about Manskirt. Always a different style. It's not just IPA heavy or stout heavy. Always got something new. Now, they got Oktoberfest in town this weekend. They're going to be releasing three beers, Oktoberfest Lager, Hoppy Wheat Beer, and a Czech Pilsner. October 3rd is their third anniversary, and they're doing a party on October 13th, and they got Big Brew Festival in Morristown on October 6th. So a lot of chances to, if you can't make the brewery, to go check out their product at different beer festivals. So go give them some love on Facebook, on the Instagram machine, and that is Manskirt Brewing. Now, we are also brought to you by Wolf Nation, W-U-L-F, Wake Up, Live Free. Wolf Nation is an up-and-coming clothing company, designer clothing for men, women, children, dogs, you name it. They just came out with snapback hats, new sweatshirts. I think he was even doing bathing suits the last time I saw him. So a lot of product being pushed up. And Wolf Nation stands for Wake Up, Live Free. It's only a dream if you are not pursuing it. So go check them out. Give them some love. Go check out wolfnation.rocks, where he is taking pre-orders for some great clothing. That is Wolf Nation. Wake up, live free. Finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Trivia Revolution is a trivia company based out of New Jersey in beer bars and breweries. Every week we play, it's free to play. You could win prizes. You could be the dumbest guy in the bar and still win prizes. There's a bonus item every week and just a lot of beer-themed games and whatnot. So that is Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. All right, this week on the podcast, I am very excited. A couple years ago, we had Riley Breckenridge of the band Thrice on the show, the drummer of Thrice. Now we are joined by not only Riley, but Riley and his brother Ed Breckenridge, who is the bass player of Thrice. They just released a new album a couple weeks ago called Palms, and it is fantastic. So you got to check it out. This is a big moment for me. I've been listening to the band for about 20 years, so very exciting. So with that, guys, enjoy the podcast.
Hey, this is Ed.
And I'm Riley, and we're from the band Thrice, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cute and fun. Yeah, I mean, your shenanigans are cruel and tragic. Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Welcome back to episode 216. Mike Berlew, are you ready?
Well, I'm ready after that song. I'm hoping you sing it for our guest tonight.
I will.
Skills. When I gave you the challenge to come up a song for the next episode, I didn't think it would come out that beautifully.
I will ask them if they would like to use it, if I could license it to them, possibly as a B-side on the new album, something like that.
A little guest track. I like that.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, everybody, welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans, our weekly installment of a show that, I don't know, we simply look for interesting guests weekly, and then other than that, we try to just kind of, play fun games, see what's going on in life, do some other fun stuff. So I really summed it up there, I guess. But welcome to Verbal Shenanigans.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm Scott. He's Mike.
We're a show that talks to people and then do other things.
Yeah. We're very much, according to last week's podcast, just like Bill Burr and WTF with Mark Maron. So we're right there. We're right underneath them.
The cusp.
In some people's eyes, above them. In some people's eyes.
True.
Above them. But it's been a good couple weeks for us. Last week's episode was a lot of fun. We talked to Lucy Spraggan. Maybe a lot of Americans don't know who she is. But it was funny. Like, it was almost after we interviewed her, I realized what a you know, she has a pretty decent sized following over there in the UK. You know, close to a million Twitter followers, and there's a lot of videos on there. I found a fan club on Facebook, so there's a she's got quite a following, and she was an awesome interview. One of my favorites of the year.
Yeah, but all the fans are in England, so I give it a thumbs down. I mean,
what do you have against
if
England?
It's not in my country, I don't want anything to do with it. You understand me?
George is rubbing off on you, huh?
Yep. Not in my country.
Well, I gotta imagine some of the people you flea market, you went attended their flea markets have to be, or yard sales. I'm sure you've ran into a couple of those type of people.
For the most part, they are all pleasant people. I will say, like, when I was house hunting, I did go across a few rebel flags along the way trying to find some houses where I'm like, I'm not sure how far this is going to go.
That's like the last time I was in the Adirondacks. I saw some house with a rebel flag. I'm like, you know, you guys lost, right? Like, you're in the wrong state here. New York.
He's in New York, man. I mean, what's his plan? It's like, I'm going to fit in. I'm going to tell him the word about the Confederacy. I know we've been down for about a couple hundred years, but I tell you what, we're going to rebuild and we're going to take this thing.
That sadly, that is probably some people's like idea. Like, we're rebuilding this Confederacy. We're going to split this nation back into the way it belongs.
Mm-hmm.
General Lee quit. I didn't.
Who are you, General?
He wasn't a real leader. Now we got our real leader in office.
Yeah. You know, it's like a college, you know, the South loves college football. It's just a rebuilding state, you know. Eventually, the Tennessee Volunteers are going to win, and the Confederacy is going to take over the United States.
Right.
It's
just
all a matter of time.
It's kind of like the
recruit.
It's like the 76ers. It took 100 years to rebuild. Mm-hmm. But now they're good, you know, like, so that's kind of what the South is hoping for, the process. Right.
You keep failing at it, and then when nobody's expecting it, it's like, oh, dang, they got Embiid, maybe I'm for slavery after all, never mind.
Right, you got to trust the process.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And that's what it is.
That's the way you got to go.
I saw you went to the Braves Stadium.
Yep. They got a nice setup down there. They got literally like almost like a little town right next to the stadium with like a bunch of bars and different hangouts and stuff like that. Like, they actually embrace people coming down even without a ticket, and you can literally be outside the stadium and watch on a big screen what's going on
right
in the field right there.
Yeah, that seems to be the modern stadium feel, kind of this all access walk around. You know, they don't really, it almost seems like they have more things distracting you from being in the seats. Like, there's so much to do and check out. And now, is that that's like outside of Atlanta, right?
I think the address is Atlanta. It's definitely on the, it's not in Atlanta, it's on the cusp. It's not like like the Giants playing in New Jersey, right, or Washington playing in Virginia. They're literally like, if they don't consider it Atlanta, it's literally like 5 minutes away from Atlanta. So it's not a big deal.
Yeah, like on TV, it looks really nice. Like, they all look nice now. Like, all the stadiums look like they'd be somewhere I'd want to go. Even the Marlins stadium, the lime green cavernous ballpark with eight people in it, I'd like to check out.
Yeah, I just want to go there just to mock the big thing they have in center field. I don't even know what that is, but it's just full of different colors or whatever. I'm guessing it's a structure of some kind.
There's definitely a fish on it, too, or a marlin.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. But how that team got a new stadium before, like, a lot of other teams or baseball towns that could use a team, I don't know. It's amazing that team stayed there.
Well, they made the deal, and then the second they made the deal, they sold off on everything just so they could make money again.
Yeah. That one definitely slipped through the cracks somehow. But I noticed that you are wearing a Phillies jersey at the Braves game.
Well, they were playing the Phillies.
But what about the Mets jersey?
That's it. In her logic, it's like, well, I got to represent my team. I'm like, so, like, are you going to go over to the scoreboard and point at it and give a thumbs up and yeah, know, like brag on the Atlanta fans.
When I see that, it reminds me of when I was younger, going to the Devils games. You know, I grew up going to a lot of Devils games. That was probably the sport I went to most. And if you remember growing up in Jersey, the Devils was a slow climb to a fan base. It wasn't this instant like, oh, yeah, we have a big fan. Like, even now, there's still a smaller market. And there would always be someone in full Rangers jerseys, and they'd be playing, like, the Capitals. And like, oh. Like, don't you just go home. Like, don't – I don't care if, like, you want to watch a – like, I've been to a million Yankee games. But, you know, I'm not going to wear my awful Mets jersey. In fact, it's putting, like, a target on my back.
The worst I ever did was I wore a Redskins hat to, like, an Eagles-Patriots game. But I didn't go, like, full Redskin gala. It actually worked out well because it was, like, a guy – it was my former boss when we used to be friends. He got tickets, then he got other tickets. So we got, like, literally front row right behind the Patriots, and I got to see Larry Sanders, who was a former Redskin at the time on the Patriots, and I yelled at him. I'm like, good luck to you. Thank you for watching. And he gave me a thumbs up and all that.
Did you have a catch with him?
No, he gave me a weird look. And all.
Yeah.
Dear Mr. Sanders, my dad wanted to play catch with me.
Plus the fact that you had your shirt off was just a weird, yeah, you know, weird vibe. Weird vibe.
Yeah, I had hater right across the chest. I figure if I politely talk to him, even though I was shirtless with body paint on, that he would see right through it and want to have a catch.
No. But, what are your thoughts on, like, wearing the shirt of a band to a concert?
If I happen to have it, I mean, I guess so.
See, I can't do it. I feel like you can't, I can't wear the band that I'm, like, seeing. I feel like it's almost like a cheese factor. Like, they know, like, oh, cool, like, we know you're here to see us, you know? Not that anyone's really paying attention to me. And then I also have a problem where you go to, like, you go to tailgate before a concert, and the cars are just playing all the music of the band you're going to see in, like, 20 minutes. Like, I went to see John Fogerty this summer, and every car was playing Creedence Clearwater. It's like, well, we're going to hear it in a few minutes. Play something else.
Yeah.
You know, like,
no spoilers, man. Come on. I never heard this band before.
Does he see the rain? I don't know.
Oh, damn it, man. I stayed in the dark room all day not listening to music to make sure they didn't accidentally play music while I was listening to ensure that I was going to be surprised when it walked in.
Wait.
Guess what happened?
Did John Fogerty, is he a senator's son? I don't know. Is he a senator's son? Is it him?
Maybe he'll change it up and all. Maybe he'll sing that he's a mayor's son just for this event. And so you guys been spoiling it, so I got to help people out here. The newbies.
Yeah, that was a hell of a concert. Side note, seeing John. I'm a big Creedence Clearwater fan. I think a lot of people are. They're like one of those bands that you're like, oh my god, they have 5,000 hits. It's just hit after hit after hit. Mm-hmm. Like, every person knows at least 10 Creedence songs, and they might not even know.
No.
You do. I'm telling you. Are you giving me the finger? What are you doing?
No, I'm about to count how many. You're about to do 10. You said everybody can do 10.
Oh, okay, okay. All right, hold on. All right, let me bring up a list just to make sure that that you might know these. All right. All right. Well, you obviously know "Fortunate Son."
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, "Have You Ever Seen the Rain?"
Obviously.
How about "Down on the Corner"?
Obviously.
"Bad Moon Rising."
Good.
Up Around the Bend.
Halfway there.
"Born
Halfway
on a Bayou." There.
Yep.
"Proud Mary."
Yep. Yeah, that's good.
This isn't Creedence since John Fogerty, but "Center Field." "Put Me In, Coach."
It's a gray area, but I'll allow it.
Hold on. I'm trying to find a list. That's the problem. I can't do this without help.
you tell me that I'm going to know 10 songs.
You are.
Just right. Trying to push away to the interview. Classic Scott.
Listen. Okay. Creedence Clearwater. Susie Q.
Okay.
Shoot your cue. Oh, God damn it. I lost my list. Anyway, that was like eight.
That was like nine. False advertising as usual,
hold
Scott.
Hold on. I can't find a list. I can't find a list.
You can't Google click.
Oh, rolling on a river. Rolling.
All right.
Rolling. Okay, whatever. That might have been 8, 9, 10, something like that. My point is that every song he plays, you're like, whoa. Like unbelievable. And then I didn't realize what, like, how much he was the essence of that band. Like, he wrote everything. Like, so he basically played guitar and everything, too. They got into, like, a horrific lawsuit where they actually took his own songs away from him. He had to prove that he, like, wrote those songs, which is insane. I hope you're planning to do that with the podcast one day. Like, I'm not going to be able to, you know, I'm not going to be able to hear myself. You're going to own the rights to it.
I think the judge just loved him and wanted to hear some of his songs. So he's just like, no, I don't believe you. Why don't you come in and do a few bars, you know?
Rolling on a river.
But 3 hours later, he's got his lighter up the judge. You know, it's like, all right, case dismissed.
But can you imagine that being like your own art being just like taken away from you? Like at one point, Michael Jackson didn't own some of his songs. Like Paul McCartney, I believe, owned a bunch of them.
I thought it was the other way around. I thought.
Oh, yeah, maybe right. Sorry. Stuff. I think that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Maybe. I'm just going to pretend I meant that. But yes. Some of the Beatles songs, like that's why a lot of the Beatles songs apparently were starting to be like used in commercials and stuff because Michael Jackson didn't care.
He had to make up the Neverland money that he was losing by not putting out albums.
You ever see,
because of that small misunderstanding.
You know, sometimes we forget Steve Harvey was a pretty good comedian, pretty well-known comedian before all the, you know,
Kings of Comedy.
Yeah. You ever hear his bit on like, Michael Jackson, people don't know how much Michael Jackson money is. He's like, Michael Jackson has giraffe money. He's like, you need a lot of money. When you got giraffe money, you don't know what to do. Like, you have no idea what to do with your money.
That's a great line.
It's really good. And I think it was recent, too, because he had, like, the shaved head going. And I remember the old Steve Harvey with the more of the square.
Yeah.
The flat top.
It was him, Cedric the Entertainer, Bernie Mac. Who was the other one in that group?
What do you mean by the other one?
The Kings of Comedy. That was the tour.
I thought you just meant like maybe you were.
That they were part of. I remember there's four headlining comedians.
I thought you were about to call them You People.
I haven't been down here that long.
Who's the other one?
I can't pick them up.
Bernie Mac, I know that. Sorry for everyone listening that we're just like looking up lists of things.
The number one podcast that Googles everything live.
Hold on. Let's see. Original Kings of Comedy. Cedric the Entertainer, Bernie Mac, Steve Harvey, and D.L. Hughley.
Yeah, I remember him from his show.
Yeah. Yeah, they were like, they should have had like that versus like the blue collar guys, and they could have done like a, you know, black versus white thing.
Well, that's what we need more of in this world.
Right. Obviously. That's how we bring the world together.
Yeah. You know, we're obviously totally different. So, you know, we have to compete against each other, and then the winner of that will rule the world.
All right, Berlo. I would be lying if I told you I was not pumped for our guests. It's time. We have two guests tonight. Two at one.
Ooh.
So it's a conference call we're going into.
So
from the WWF, Earthquake and Tugboat.
Yeah, that's a, well, Earthquake is dead, so that's going to be kind of hard. But
we were talking about Tugboat's still alive?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. He is.
It's amazing that guy lived and not some of the guys who were actually well in shape, but... Anyway, we had one of the guests on. It has to be about 2 years ago. It was when their last album came out.
Episode 121, Scott.
Oh, wow. So that was just about 100 episodes ago. Holy crap. So, yeah, two years, about 52 episodes a year. Well, So Riley Breckenridge, but now we are – Riley Breckenridge is a drummer from a band I've been following literally for 20 years. So it's pretty amazing to see them keep going, keep reinventing themselves. They just released a new album called Palms last Friday. So when this comes out, it'll be 2 weeks ago. His brother is joining us, who is the bass player of the band, Ed Breckenridge. So we're going to have both Breckenridge brothers on, and I'm pretty pumped. I'm not going to lie.
That's kind of cool, man. So we got, get them all together.
Yep, we got Brennan Berlew and the two Breckenridges.
Ah, quad B's, yo.
Quaddy B. Quaddy, you know, you heard of Cardi B?
Mm-hmm.
We're starting a group called Quaddy B.
Hey, maybe they'll invite us to perform at the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, anyway, guys, without further ado, here is our interview with Riley and Ed of Thrice, the Breckenridge brothers. I am pumped. Here we go.
Hello?
Ed.
Hi, sorry about that. I exceeded the number of tries to put the password in. It made me call again.
No problem. First off, Ed, Riley, Scott, and Mike, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans, and really, really thank the two of you for just even giving me a few minutes. It really is a, I really appreciate it a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
Pleasure, man. First off, I got to congratulate you guys on the new album. It's been out for not too long now, about a week and a half or so. I've been listening to it out of different stereos. I've been listening to it on vinyl. I listen to it in the car, and I'm really picking up new things all the time and really starting to dig the sound more and more as I listen to it. So I want to congratulate you guys with the release and the new label. And once again, it is a Thrice album. You have combined old sounds and also found a lot of new things. So congratulations on the new release, guys.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's pretty cool to think that, I mean, it's got to be interesting to think that you guys have basically been around for 20 years now. Does it feel that long to you?
I'd say it kind of does and doesn't. Time flies, especially when you're on the road. And, like, I mean, we just put out a record 2 years ago, and now we're putting out another one, but it doesn't seem like it's been 2 years between them. It could be, like, 6 months or something, but then you think about all the stuff that you've done over the years and all the places you've traveled to and all the people you've met, and it's like, holy crap, we have been at this for a long time. And it's insane because it's definitely not something that we expected to be a possibility when we started the band. I mean, we were just kind of goofing off and just taking opportunities that came our way, and somehow we ended up with a 20-year career that I don't think we have any intention of stopping anytime soon. So it's rad, and it's something we're really grateful for.
Yeah.
Now let me ask you something. You guys, obviously, it's got to be a pretty amazing thing not only to do this for a living, you know, to be able to, you know, do your art for a living and play music for a living, but to do it with your brother. Has to be quite an amazing feeling. Like, were you always playing music together before Thrice? Before, like, was it you guys playing in the garage, or did it, like, were you playing separately and then a band needed two guys? How did you guys actually start playing together?
We weren't playing together. I think Riley started playing music in high school. I want to go the long route. He ended up, like, borrowing a guitar from a friend at, like, one of his first jobs. And that kind of turned us on to rock music in a way that we hadn't really been involved in before that. I think before that we were listening to a lot of hip-hop and R&B and, like, you know, Velvet DeVoe and Beastie Boys and LL Cool J and stuff like that at the time. But
the Breckenridge Boys has a good R&B sound to it.
Hey,
it's not too late. It's not too late is what I'm saying.
It isn't too late. But yeah, and then he ended up going to college and started doing, I mean, he had a band with some friends, but I wasn't really This is Ed. I wasn't really involved in music until like the latter half of high school for me. And I became friends with Tepe and Dustin through skateboarding and mutual friends and liking similar styles of music. And then Riley had been playing in some punk rock bands, and we needed a drummer. And I was like, hey, Ry, would you be willing to play with us until we find somebody? Because we were just kind of like dead in the water as far as like we had bass and guitars and singing kind of ideas. And then Riley also wrote music, so it was a really cool way to come together. And then there was a point where we were just like, why are we even thinking about looking for somebody else? I mean, the age gap was a little bit weird right at first. Like, we'd play our first shows and Riley'd be like, okay, I'm out. Because it would be like a house party with friends, and he's, you know, college and we're high school kids. So it was a little bit weird. But,
I think about playing music with my brother. Together. Like we have an age gap. Me and my brother are 4 years, so he would be in college. I don't know. Like, we were never like close enough where like I could start rocking out and I could look at, like, I feel like he'd make fun of me. Like, I don't know. Like, we never had this like music connection.
I guess I was young enough to where I looked up to Riley. Like, he would show me music and I'd be super stoked on it. And then it was really influential to me. So I don't know.
I think we got along really well too. So,
yeah.
I didn't want to make fun of you. I wanted to like teach you stuff or like make sure that you were all right and like happy.
Yeah.
That's so nice.
Oh, yeah. Like poking fun at him or like trying to belittle him because he was younger than me just wasn't something that I wasn't on the agenda for me.
Yeah.
You wanted to be an Obi-Wan, and then when he got the confidence up, then you made fun of him. My God.
Yeah.
Now, is it true when I was looking up, but no, you didn't even play bass? You had no experience when you joined Thrice? Is that correct?
Yeah, I ended up borrowing one of Riley's bandmates' old basses or something to start playing with the guys. I had played a little bit of guitar. I had like a classical guitar, I guess.
Right.
Oh no, I think I had an electric guitar, but I was like way more into skateboarding and doing other. I was a big fan of music. I was like way into Metallica and I don't know whatever bands I was listening to back then. But I definitely could like put my fingers to the strings and play. I do remember though the first time we got together, I was like, I can't listen to what they're doing and play what I'm playing at the same time. Like that's how new I was when we started. But I mean, it was really fortunate because I was kind of thrown into a situation where people were a lot better than me or had been playing for a while, and it kind of forced me to figure stuff out real quick. And I mean, I still kind of feel like that in some ways too. So like, so, it's always good to surround yourself with people that can push you, you know?
So now 20 years later, what is, you know, you guys got families and wives and everyone's got kids, and you know, it's obviously a totally different thing. I remember seeing you guys at Surf and Skate. You guys were like, you were in Asbury Park, New Jersey, and you were just like young kids, you know, playing, you know, heavy aggressive music, and a bunch of you had spiky hair and stuff. And now, you know, 20 years later, family, kids, and now you're doing it with your brother. Is it a different shift now, like in mindset? Like, are you more appreciative now? Are you able to take a step back from that? Or does it just feel kind of like it's your job and you're just, you know, going through the motions here with him?
I think the hiatus gave us a little bit of perspective, just because it kind of felt like, and part of the reason we took a hiatus was things were moving so quickly and we were so stuck in that cycle of like make a record, tour on the record, go back and write a record, record another record, get back on the road. And we were doing that for like, how long was that? Like 13 years or something. And some guys were getting burnt out on that cycle and the amount of travel that we were doing. But then we took a break for like 3 years, and people were like, wow, that, you know, we had a really cool opportunity that a lot of people would kill for. Like, we genuinely enjoy making music together. We should continue to do this. So there's definitely a newfound appreciation, and that's not to say that we were ever ungrateful for it, but I think it's just a heightened sense of appreciation now. And since the hiatus, we've worked really hard to make sure that everybody's comfortable with the amount of time we're on the road and how much work we put in, and you know, just how gnarly the schedule can get. We're trying to manage that a little better, and I think we're doing a great job, and everybody's spirits are high, and we're just enjoying doing this again, and it's rad that people still care enough to support us after we disappeared for a while.
Go ahead, Mike.
I was just wondering, like, how, when you guys just started, like, you talked about how laid back it was, you just kind of playing around. What was, like, the first moment or the first concert when you guys said to yourself, okay, we're going to be doing this for a while, or this is going to be something big?
I think it might have been, can't remember the year. We had generally played, if we played a hometown show, we'd play like this, I think it's like a 400 capacity room in Anaheim, and we could sell that out on our own. And we got a booking agent, and he was like, hey, next local show you guys do, I think you guys should play the Anaheim House of Blues. And we all thought that was insane, the capacity there. 1,200 or 1,300 people. It's like three times what we'd ever done before, and it seemed really dumb and scary and impossible for us to even fill halfway. And we ended up selling that show out, and all of our parents were in attendance, and I think something clicked that night. We were just like, whoa, maybe we can do this. And our parents saw us do it, and they were like, maybe this isn't just like a bunch of kids
making noise,
goofing off, playing music. Maybe this is like a legitimate thing. But that was like a huge momentum shift as far as like how seriously we took what we were doing, and how easy it was to convince our parents that we should drop out of school or quit jobs or whatever else and hit the road and live out of a van for 8 months out of the year or whatever it was.
Also, right before that, we had just signed with a record label, like it was Hopeless Subsidy at the time.
Yep.
And they kind of sat us down when we first met, and they were like, so if we do this, you guys have to like tour, like you have to work, like you have to be out there.
Right.
And we were like, oh wait, we're all going to school right now. How does that work? And we were kind of put in the position where we were like, oh shoot, like we're gonna have to tell our parents, and we're gonna like, or can we do this? Like, we don't want to have any regrets. And then that show really was like a helpful stepping stone for us convincing our parents even that like school can come later, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is amazing to see. I mean, you guys have had such a musical growth from, I mean, you probably have three sets of fans. You have fans that might like the old Thrice, fans that like from like Viesu on, and then probably fans that love you from everything you do. I got to ask you about the recording process of this album. I know you guys you've done a bunch of different things. So I wanted to ask you both two things. So I guess I'll start with Riley. The drums on this album, they got a different sound than a lot of the other albums. Like specifically, I was listening to The Dark today. They have this almost reverb. They sound like cannons going off. What was that? Was that the goal? Did you guys do something different with the drums this time? And how did you guys record this album differently than your last album? And then I'll get to Ed.
I think the last, like, I guess if you go all the way back to Visu, every record since then, except maybe Major Minor, we've recorded in a, we've recorded the drums in a pretty small space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can hear that on the record. And then if we did try to achieve some kind of big roomy sound, it didn't sound like a big room. It sounded like somebody trying to construct a big room with like some reverb plug-in or something.
Right.
So this time we made a point to track in a really big room, and we went to United Studios in LA, and the room there is amazing. I had the guy who basically runs and builds the drums at Q Drum Company, which is the drums that I play. He came out and teched for me and brought like a bunch of cool options as far as drums and snares went. When we were mixing the record, we really wanted to capture how lively that big room was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we accomplished it for the most part. I mean,
definitely. I mean, that's the first feeling I get is kind of this raw, live sound. Like, that's a lot of the songs. That's the vibe I kind of get. I don't know if that's what you were going for, but...
Yeah, no, the goal was to make them sound big and raw and real, and like they were played in a big space. And
right.
Yeah.
Which I think
is refreshing, at least for my ears, because so many contemporary recordings are
too perfect.
Run through like the same plugins and everything snapped to a grid, or they replace sounds with samples.
Yep.
It can end up making records sounding a lot alike. So I think we tried to avoid that this time around, and I think we achieved it.
Okay, so now I want to ask Ed. Now, Ed, I even made a comment. This sounds real nerdy. Comment on the Thrice Facebook page, like the message board, that this album could also be called the Ed album. Like, I'm a bass player, and I have been following you for a long time. First off, it's really cool to talk to you, but you're finally, like, I feel like this is just like your bass is really shining through on this album. You're getting that grabber tone that I absolutely love. I remember like, you know, get early on following, getting to punk rock or whatever, and following the Mike Dirnt from Green Day, and he played it, and then I found out you played it, and I heard it live, and it has just such a distinct sound. And it really finally, I think, translates on a record, like that grabber sound, that gnarliness. What was different this time?
Well, I mean, we recorded ourselves. Like, so the process is kind of weird. We did the drums in a studio, like a big, like, kind of like studio up in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And then we recorded all the guitars and keyboards and overdubs in my friend's studio in Santa Ana. Tepe did all the engineering and production on that. We kind of just like set up camp in there and went at it. And then the vocals were done in the same studio that we did To Be Everywhere, To Be Nowhere. Dustin was doing those separately. So we really got to focus in on a lot of the tones, not just the bass tone. But it's without any outside influence, I think. So it really feels like me. But I also think, the way that John Congleton, the guy that mixed it, mixed it, it's very bass forward, almost to a point where I was like, guys, this is too much. Like, I want, like, it might be too much in your face. Like, it sounds cool, but is it dominating everything? And
I don't think so.
Maybe it is. I mean, it sounds like closer to what it sounds like on my stage. Like
that's what I was
going to
say. It has a very live, like, I've seen you guys a bunch of times. It sounds like it's being played in front of me, and that's the sound I like.
Oh. There was a very conscious effort to do that, because I feel like the last record was pretty like chopped up and nice and neat. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's lots of like wacky sounds on it, but we were like I want to hear string noise. I want to hear, you know, when you hear the bass, I don't want to just hear the low end. I want to hear like the string scraping the strings and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And that's stuff that I nerd out about on records that I really like, or like Fugazi records. You know, you hear that little feedback that pops in right before a big part comes in or something like that. And we actually recorded the, like as overdubs, some of the guitar feedbacks and stuff that happens, just because we were like, this part sounds too clean. Like, there's a guitar that's not doing something here. Let's make guitar noise. So I'd go into the other room and Debbie would record me just with his guitar playing, either playing over it or just making guitar feedback noise.
Right.
Not just on the bass, I'm saying, like on the guitar stuff too. So it was super fun. I really like the freedom of, I mean, I like the freedom of being able to record stuff ourselves. There's an awesome thing about working with a producer where you learn a ton. Like every recording, you learn so much, but it's nice having that outside opinion. But I'm so hesitant. Like, I'm not forward enough with my ideas or confident in them. So right. I feel like there's more of our like natural reactions. Like, no, the guitars don't need a crap ton of distortion. Let's make them really like bassy and heavy and snappy that you don't get with distortion, because that kind of smooths it all out.
Yeah, I mean,
there's lots of stuff like that.
I mean, yeah, one thing like I think you guys always do on each record is you play with the definition of heavy. I think you know, like heavy, you know, heavy 15 years ago, it was a lot different than what you're doing heavy now, but yeah, it's still heavy and tonal and grindy and just, there's a lot of, it's a different heavy with that melody over the top, that harmony over the top. And I think that's what's like really come out in your sound over the last couple albums, you know. I don't know if that's accurate or not either, but that's what I gather, like playing with the definition of heavy but yet melodic at the same time. I do want to ask you guys, when you go into the recording process as a band, not now, I talked to you about drums and bass, but as a band, do you have like a goal, like, hey, we want this record to sound like, I guess Palms for me is like a little bit more raw sounding. We want it to sound raw and live. Like, do you have an overall goal, or does that come from writing and jamming, and then you're like, okay, this is how we want it to sound? Like, is it a meeting, or is it does it just develop on its own?
I think it's a goal from the beginning, but in every recording process, the songs kind of dictate where they want the record to go and what they want it to sound like, and you kind of have to be willing to adjust. But I think we've always talked, on every record, we've talked about, like, we want this to be, like, more raw and not, you know, note perfect or, like, over edited or anything like that. And you know, certain songs you can edit things and shine them up a little bit, but other ones it's cool to leave in a human element, or this, like the feedback that Ed's talking about, or just there's like creaking of an old piano on Everything Belongs. Like, I think that's Tepe either pressing down the pedals or like sitting on
the scrappy pedal.
Okay. Yeah, so, and it was noisy. And if you were, a lot of producers would be like, oh my God, we can't do that. Nope, can't have that noise.
Right.
But it adds character to us, so we wanted to keep it. Yeah, I think
the interesting thing.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the interesting thing is that's very like specific to the type of music that maybe we listen to. So like, I don't know if our fans like that, but... you know, it's like that ear candy stuff is like, I freak out about that on records. Like when you hear a record for like the 30th time and you hear that, like, wait, what is that little beep? Is that like what's that little beep? And that's like just another depth to enjoy about a record. And I hope the people that listen to our music enjoy that we take the time to do that, you know, but maybe not. Either, I'm sure there's people that don't, but it's there for you if you like that.
Yeah.
Come and gone and changed different members. You guys have the same place for 20 years. What do you think the secret is? And to Eddie, I want to know, what kind of difference did you see when you were with Angels and Airwaves compared to Thrice?
Well, that ended, to start out with the Angels and Airwaves thing, that didn't end up really happening.
Right.
They made an announcement, and then they kind of decided they didn't want it. Like, they were working on a record. I wasn't involved in the recording or writing of the record, and then it just ended up not really becoming a touring band anymore. So I kind of like hit that at the wrong time. But in the end, it ended up being great, because like a couple weeks later, we ended up starting talking about doing Thrice stuff again, which is. I mean, I never felt like we were finished, and maybe that leads on to what you were saying. It's like, every time you record a record, you finish it and you're like, yeah, but what if we do this? And we've always had that, always. And also, everybody has different identities in like what they enjoy in music, and they're trying to push that in there. And sometimes that gets pushed to the side a little bit, or, you know, I feel like maybe Riley's drums, they sound great, but I wish they were a little bit louder in some of the choruses. Like, oh, next time we do it, I want them to be like more in your face in the chorus. Or, you know, there's things to be excited about, and there's people that are putting out records too all the time that you can just totally fall in love with and just make you want to pick up a guitar and play. And that's, I don't think we'll ever lose that. Like, I'm so excited to write the next thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that is... go ahead, Riley, go ahead.
Oh. Creating music is such a cool adventure because it's not like a math problem where you finally figure out the answer or something. Like, I can't imagine making a record and being like, yep, we did it. That's the good one. We're all set. It's all done here. Let's wrap it up.
Right. Yeah.
So you're always trying to better yourself. I think also, you know, each of us is kind of competitive in their own way. So you're always trying to get better at what you're doing and always trying to push yourself further and see if you can do more with what's at your disposal. So like Ed said, like, we wrap a record and everybody's just eager to do it again. You're just full of ideas. So I think that's why we've all stayed together and continued to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as like longevity is concerned, I guess like learning how to communicate better and learning how to respect people for the positives and negatives that they bring to the table. I mean, it's never going to be a perfect relationship ever, but it's like any relationship. Like, you have friends or you have a girlfriend or a wife that does certain things that like rub you the wrong way, but you learn how to deal with them and appreciate the great things about them. And it's just like a relationship, a 20-year marriage that's going pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's certainly better having you guys back than not, I'll tell you that much. I will see you guys on the, I think it's the 5th of October in New York. Before we get out of here, Riley, I remember the last time I interviewed you about 2 years ago, I had asked you if the digital world didn't exist and emailing and being able to share files, I had asked you if Thrice would still exist. You responded like you weren't really quite sure because you guys are able to kind of all chip in and keep ideas going and whatnot. I was wondering if, one, did that, like, how, when you guys write a new album, does that still, are you all just throwing ideas into a pot and everybody's just, you know, picking what's good and whatnot? And two, obviously, to end this interview, I'd like to know what's the future for you guys? Is it going to be do this tour and start writing again, do a tour and take a break? What is the future of the band for either of you guys? So it's a two-parter.
Okay. the digital world is still super important to the Thrice writing process. It's how we share ideas and how we organize everything from like songwriting to just band like day-to-day communication. we use like some workflow app, I guess is the best descriptor for it. It's called Asana, and it just helps keep us organized and keeps people from having to sift through their multiple email inboxes to find a conversation that we had a year ago or something. Everything's really neatly filed.
Right.
And I think that's been super helpful during the writing process, because when we take these songs from just like, it could be a 5-second clip or a almost fully fleshed out song, there are a lot of changes that happen during the writing process. And since we're discussing a lot of it basically on like a message board,
right,
it's all there to refer to. So it's not like, oh man, remember when you had that idea for the chorus? And I think, did you say it in a text or email?
Right.
Did you say it at practice? Like, it's all there.
On a napkin somewhere?
Super helpful. And then we'll build out rough demos of the songs in Logic and then share those Logic sessions with each other. And then that way you can kind of go in and tinker with stuff on your own time and spend as much or as little time on it as you want. And then we get in a room and jam everything out and just kind of go from there. And then for the future, this tour is split up into two legs, which is a result of us trying to make touring life more manageable for both us and our families.
Mm-hmm.
So we finished the first leg of this like mid-October. We're home for 2 weeks. After Halloween, we head out for most of November, wrap that up. I think we're home for December, and then in February, we're heading to Australia.
Nice.
For the first time in like a decade, which is awesome and long overdue. And then we're kind of trying to figure out what next year is going to be like, both domestically and internationally. I think we're definitely going back to Europe and the UK again. And I'm sure we'll do, if not just one US tour, maybe two or three, depending on opportunities that arise.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So before we go, Riley, I got to ask you one more question. Big Angels fan. I know you are. I'm a big Met fan, both awful years. Do the Angels ever get help for Mike Trout, or is he going to leave when this is all done, said and done?
Well, as an Angels fan, I would love for them to get help for Mike Trout, and I almost thought that they did that this year, but then every other Angel pitcher's arm falls off and he needs Tommy John surgery, and then,
yeah.
the other pieces that they brought in got injured.
You're like the West Coast Mets.
It's insane. They're not as bad as the Mets, but they're nobody can out Mets the Mets.
It hurts because it's so true.
Yeah. I'm hoping that they get him some help. And you know, in a perfect world, when his contract up at the end of 2020, he re-signs like a lifetime deal with the Angels. But I don't think if I was him, you probably couldn't convince me to stay there. Like, there's been no success while he's been there. The money that he's going to get is going to be absurd, but it's going to exist anywhere. Like, he's the best player on earth.
Yep.
So people are going to pay an ass load of money for him in any market. So he can basically write his own ticket, and he seems like such a family first dude, and he's so steeped in like Jersey and
New Jersey's finest
Philadelphia Eagles and stuff like that. That if I'm him and the Phillies, if I'm him and the Phillies offer, you know, maybe he'd even take less money to play in Philly.
Don't say, because Mike is a diehard Phillies fan, and we're video chatting right now. His smile, I just want to punch him through the screen.
I just see his face every time he comes back. You know, he goes to an Eagles game or something like that. He's just so happy and smiling. He's like, he's comfortable. That's where he's meant to be, Scott.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we'll get Machado with him, and, you know.
Bryce Harper too. Yeah, I just, I see him going to Philly. If he goes to the Yankees, I think I'm gonna divorce baseball altogether because I just can't handle.
Can't handle that.
I think there's no reason for him to stay in an Angels uniform unless he just likes being the best player in baseball on a perpetually mediocre team.
Yeah.
You could do that with the Mets if you wanted to be closer to home.
Thanks, Ed, for that one syllable laugh.
Yes.
Anyway, guys, I want to thank both of you so much. It's really awesome talking to you. I can't wait to see you in 2 weeks. Like I said, I'm enjoying the album, and it's just it's really nice to talk to you from a fan perspective, and both just to pick your brains a little bit. And it's just a really good experience. I want to thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, always a pleasure, man. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was a great interview. I'm just thinking about the news about the Phillies getting Mike Trout, but still.
Yeah, I didn't like that part. What's great is that I have the editing power, so I can just insert, like, yeah, he looked really great in a Mets uniform.
See, my vision is Mike Trout signs with the Phillies, and he says, it's great to be here. I plan to win a lot of World Series. And by the way, pineapple pizza sucks. That would be my ultimate thank you to yourself there, Scott.
And then he asks you to play catch with him, and you do an interview. You would do an interview together.
Yeah, solo interview, you know. I didn't have my phone at the time because I was playing catch.
Right. But anyway, the boys from Thrice love it. It's pretty awesome where this little tiny podcast has gone. So go get Palms today by Thrice. Yeah, I did a show on Saturday night in Jersey City, and I haven't been up in a few weeks, and I had to do like 15-20 minutes. Woof.
Mm-hmm.
Halfway through, that was a little bit rusty, that's for sure. It's amazing how a couple weeks can feel like eternity. Like you feel like, I don't know any of my jokes. I don't remember any of this stuff. And then, like, going into it, like, you're like, okay, I got this. And then, like, first 7 minutes was great. It was, like, all off the cuff, playing with, in and out of jokes, playing with the front row. And it was like, yeah, I got this. And then about 10 minutes to the 15-minute mark, 10 to 15, it was some rough sailing there. But
Yeah,
it was I had, like, I'm a sweater on stage to begin with, and I had, like, a flannel on because I kind of thought it was flannel weather, but maybe it wasn't quite flannel weather on stage weather.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pouring sweat. I looked like who's a comic that has a towel all the time? Someone brings a towel up with them because they sweat so bad. I don't know, but
why don't you Google it, Scott?
Who wears a towel up with them? But yeah, comedy is weird, man. Like when you're away from it for a while, it's like it feels like it's not like riding a bike at all. It's like this constant, like, yeah. And then what I do is I'll go back to stuff that I know that quote unquote works because I'm like, All the momentum I gained on, like, a new joke, it's not, like, I'm not ready to do it again when I'm going back on. Like, I'm not, like, oh, I was making progress, and then I stopped because I was, like, afraid to do it again in front of new people. So, it's just weird, man. It's just weird.
It's a rhythm thing. So.
It is. Would you ever think about getting back on stage?
It'd be kind of hard. In my head, I say, you know, I wrote good enough. It all came down to my comfort level on stage and being able to, if you have a bad night, just saying, oh, fuck, it was bad night, whatever. I mean, that was always the struggle with it. When I was in a rhythm, I don't want to say I made history on stage, but
I remember
I was
that
good
night.
Enough. Barlow. Remember they gave me the line, they just started booing. There was almost a riot. It was crazy.
Your next
man.
Comic, Dave Chappelle, boo. Bring back Burlo. Bring it back.
And there's Ovi in the background. Where it boils down to is I would have to be comfortable. I got to basically start from scratch. I got to go to open mics. I got to rebuild myself. I basically go out there alone because I don't know any comedians out here. And
it might be it might be almost beneficial now because you've stepped away from it, like where you probably stepped away from a bunch of your old material. Like it would almost be kind of like, okay, start again.
Starting anew. You know? Yeah.
But
I mean, my biggest thing I would say in my head, I always kind of wonder maybe I've been more comfortable maybe doing improv on stage where there's somebody else out there and all, because when I got nervous, there's always because I'm the one up there and I had to get that first laugh out before I calmed down and got into my rhythm. But
yeah, you were always like nervous beforehand, and then you were usually fine on stage. Once you got on stage, you were fine. Like even if it wasn't your best set, you didn't like come off like you were dying up there. You would just be like, eh, whatever. Like you seemed like you were rolling once you stepped on stage.
Yeah,
and you were always a good you were always a good writing partner. Like you were good to write with. So there's definitely something there. Shut up, Obi.
But I agree, Daddy.
Yeah, I was always curious if like maybe like when you moved down to Georgia or if you took some time off, if you were ever going to try it again, or you thought your skills would be better suited like writing or producing. Maybe we could produce skits or whatnot. But I was always curious what your thoughts were, your inner thoughts.
I mean, my inner thoughts is I think I write pretty good. I do pretty decent, you know. I can come up with things. I can feed off of people and items like that. Is perform, like if we're just like recording a skit, I'm perfectly fine with that. Even by myself, I can get into character and stuff like that.
You do skits. As I said, you do skits by yourself.
Well, like anything, like we wrote a skit, Burlo, you're the character. I'm not going to sit back and be panicking. Oh, I don't know about this and stuff like
that.
It's
You'll practice in the bathroom.
Exactly. That's where I feel the most comfortable. In fact, my next stand-up act, I'll just invite people to the house and close the bathroom door, and they'll be just rolling in my living room.
Well, if
dying.
Anything, you could put a mic in the bathroom and invite like four people real tight. It'll feel like a tight comedy club.
Yeah. Little VIP section in the bathtub just for you, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that'd be the green room and all.
Now, coming to the stage.
This is wonderful and all. I mean, I miss this stuff being on Verbal Shenanigans. You just open the shower curtain. Did somebody say shenanigans?
Yeah. Now, coming to stage. The shower curtain. No, but I was always curious. I guess we never really talked about it, and I felt like this is a good segue to talk about it because it's weird taking time off. I would this is my busy season as far as my work, my actual job. So stand up kind of takes a back seat. I just try to get up like three or four times in the month. And that in September, I did not even hold up to that. But I do have two gigs at the end of this week. But man, it is different when you don't get up, man. It's weird. So I was wondering if like you could almost see like almost in a way it might be relieving to kind of like if you ever start again to just start from scratch, get rid of all the old crap and like write about your life now. You know what I mean? I was just wondering like what you thought.
I could see myself looking at some of the old material and kind of bumping it up. But yeah, there would definitely be new things because since I've been out, got married, got a house,
moved,
left the state, all that fun stuff. So there's definitely material there. And I think I have capabilities.
Your Disney room that you're in right now, there's a bit right there.
Yep. I mean, I think the biggest restraint is basically time, just being able to, you know, leave work, go to a mic and kind of work on stuff like that and come home. And so it's possible. I can't deny it. I still have an urge to be something in comedy. But can I say beyond a shadow of a doubt, definitely coming back? I can't tell. No, I mean,
like I said, I wouldn't mind doing another improv class and kind of do that. I think even just getting comfortable with being somebody on stage and getting back to that relaxed mode, maybe it'll get out of my head and all about doing stand-up, but it's a time to tell kind of
deal. Yeah, I always found that with you, especially as time went on, you started getting, I think, more in your head stand-up, and then anytime it was like something more lax, like the improv or whatever it was, you were fine. Like, you didn't even seem to worry about it. So it'd be interesting to see if you ever approached it again, if you ever went out and just even did a silly mic, like, what your mindset would be. You might have just needed that to, like, pass, and then, you know, whatever it was. All right, brother, I want to get to one thing real quick.
Okay.
Philadelphia did it again, man.
Ah, I know what you're doing.
Your boys, the Philadelphia Flyers.
They put out a new mascot. Don't know what they were doing there. Trying to figure out the concept of this character right here.
I find him offensive.
In what way?
He's offensive to bearded gingers. He's mocking us.
So you and Mike Cicoli, pretty much.
Pretty much.
And Connor.
Yeah, exactly.
What the fuck is this?
Yeah, if we get him behind us, we have a real purpose. Okay.
That would be awesome, like just seeing Conor McGregor climb over the plexiglass, go onto the ice, and start running after the Flyers mascot to beat the crap out of him.
I'm the champ.
Well, fuck you anyway.
Yeah. He could steal the Stanley Cup. Oh, wait, never mind. The Flyers don't have a Stanley Cup.
That hurt. Philadelphia's still hung over from the Super Bowl, so they ain't caring about what you said there. I might, but.
Yeah. So, Philadelphia Flyers' new mascot, Gritty. Even the name is brutal. So, Mike, I'm looking at a picture right now. I can only explain him as all orange. He's just like he looks like his face is one whole beard, basically, with bug eye. It looks like a drawing like a fourth grader would do.
I was trying to think of what he would look like. If you remember the old McDonald's commercial, the Fry Kids, take them, make them about 6 feet taller with more buggy eyes and even less of the appeal of what I just described to you. And that's what their new mascot is.
Best tweet or repost, the Penguins posting a picture of him and then just saying, LOL, okay.
the Penguins basically on the Flyers anyway, yeah. So they can do whatever they want.
A Fox 29 reporter tweeted a photo apparently of a GoFundMe page intended to raise money to euthanize Gritty.
That's going to gain some money, you know. I mean, that's going to get more money to cancer research. I can tell you that much.
The Montreal Canadiens mascot tweeted out, "Meth is one hell of a drug," and hashtag Gritty. Someone said Gritty could be animals, granddad, deadbeat dad.
I could see that. Yeah.
Not good reaction to Gritty here, pal. What are your feelings?
I think somewhere in their minds, the Flyers look at the Philly Fanatic. Swoop is kind of people like that in Philadelphia. Even, I forget the Sixers mascot name. They kind of changed it to like a dog and like people like those three, those iconic ones, and they said, oh, we can do this. And no, you've proven clearly you can't.
Swing
you can't find
and
me a goalie,
a miss.
And you can't get me a mascot, Philadelphia Flyers. I'll put it this way. The Philadelphia Union, the MLS team, they had a thing at the zoo where a dinosaur hatched from an egg, and apparently their mascot is a dinosaur. It makes no sense why a soccer team has a dinosaur mascot, but you know what? That dinosaur works better than nothing.
This is bad. This is level 10 bad. Like, this is one of the worst I've seen in the modern day era. You know, you want to chalk one up to the 70s? Like, well, whatever. Everyone was on drugs and we didn't have good costumes. We got a lot of costumes now that they can make pretty much anything. Make a dragon. Make a... I'm trying to think what a Philadelphia film. Make a pregnant white woman from the trailer park.
Point taken. Point taken. I mean, something
Martha. Martha, the Martha, Martha, the knocked up lady.
I mean, there's flying in her name, like some kind of transformer. And I have it be like a jet that transforms into a cool orange and black robot.
Exactly. That's cool.
I mean, I'm even looking at it and I'm like, what kind of, like, most of these mascots, they do like stunts and stuff like that. What the hell is this thing going to do out on the ice?
Shave, hopefully. Shave.
Yeah.
trim it down. Trim it down.
Gritty just lost another 5 pounds of hair on the ice.
Gritty is brutal, man. Almost as brutal as the call you guys got away with on Sunday. But the roughing the passer call.
That wasn't Washington. That was the NFL that gave it to them. Yeah. That's not Washington. don't push this on Washington.
Don't push my agenda
like
on
ran over to the up and started crying and then he threw the flag.
All right. So I went and looked up. I thought Gritty might have been the worst mascot of all time.
Okay.
So I looked up a couple other mascots that just didn't go over too well.
All right.
Would you like to hear some of them?
No.
Okay. All right. What do you got? All right.
You called my bluff. Damn it. Go ahead.
Here's a couple mascots for you. First one, Okie Dokie. Scottsdale Community College artichokey.
I mean, the costume is fine. The drawing of the crooked mouth smiling thing, I don't know what they were going for that. That looks like a 5-year old.
I kind of like him. He's got cracked out eyes. he's got like meth eyes.
Somebody was doing something illegal when they made this sucker. He kind of looks like a hop. Like
I was going to just like say a hop or a Brussels sprout.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't mind him. I don't put him at the worst of all. His name is probably the worst of all time. Okie Dokie.
That's pretty bad. And it sounds like a 5-year old.
It's bad that when you have a nickname where you got to add endings to the actual word. Like it could be like Jimmy Joke the Artichoke, but it's Okie Dokie the Artichokey. That doesn't really flow with me. All right.
Did they really think they were going to like sell T-shirts with that nickname?
Let me ask you something. If I got you an Okie Dokie the Artichokey shirt right now, you would probably wear it.
I'll wear anything, pretty much.
Well, there you go. All right, let's go down to number two. The Fighting Pickle. The Fighting Pickle from North Carolina School of Arts looks like a cross between Grimace and the Hamburglar.
It kind of looks like
he's bad. He's
like a
real
pickle
bad.
On top of a cake with an artist brush.
Honestly, it looks a little phallic.
What kind of sports do they play at that college where you need a mascot?
Yeah, it is an art school, so I can't imagine they're playing much sports. So maybe he just shows up at like showings of paintings, you know, like. at theatrical plays, he just always has
go art go.
He just always has a role in like their productions. He's pretty bad. He's got like a porn pretty stash. Bad. He's got but the costume is still pretty good. That's my point. That the costume isn't bad.
I'm more mad at the old man in front of him smiling like he's like, yeah, we did it on this one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, no, you didn't do anything that spectacular, sir. Don't be smiling that big.
Yeah. All right. I think when we get down to number three, we'll start to see some bad costumes here. The Fighting Okra. The Fighting Okra from Delta State University looks like a grumpy vegetable. Okay.
So is all 20 of these food related out of curiosity?
I'm not sure. So the okra. It kind of looks like he's wearing a raft and a sheet and a bed sheet. Like the bottom, his bottom half, it looks like a raft. And with boxing, he's got boxing gloves, which means he's fighting. He looks very mad, though. Very, very mad. Very bushy eyebrows.
This is the, oh my God, I have to go to a costume contest tonight. And I grabbed the first few things I could find in the garage outfit.
And then you become a college mascot?
Well, they're like, well, what the hell are you? What, I'm a fighting okra, of course. you know the college, right? The Delta State University? That's what I am.
It'd be funny if he showed up as like a normal okra with a smile, and then like someone pushed him and he turned the smile into that frown, and they're like, oh my God, the fighting okra! Next one is brutal. Next one is brutal. The Geoducks. That's the Gooey Duck. Gooey Duck from Gooey Evergreen Duck. State College. Looks like a ring girl from Mexican. This one, a Gooey Duck, if you know, is also very phallic looking. It looks like a clam with a big dong. This one almost looks like a taco with a pickle hanging out of it.
I was going to say green turd taco, but same concept. Very bad. Very horrible. This is your mom got some materials at Michael's and wanted to surprise you with a Halloween costume. Kind of bad.
Horrific. The Wichita State University Wooshock is laughing in your face. Now, I don't know what he is. I don't know what a Wooshock is.
It looks like a yellow Gary Busey. That's the only thing I can
They have a term for that now? A Wooshock.
I guess.
It'd be great if you looked it up. Yellow Gary Busey.
I mean, if you look at his face, that's Gary Busey right there. I mean, he should really sue Wichita State. And he should represent himself in court just so I can watch that.
Number six, I'm skipping. Number seven, the Stanford Tree. We all know the Stanford Tree. He's just a tree. He's very scary looking also. Very looks like something that would haunt you in the middle of the night.
Yeah, that's just, I mean, they're standard Stanford, so we give them a pass, but it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
You figure for all those smart kids, they can come up with something better.
Mm-hmm.
I like number eight. I think the blue blob, Xavier University's blue blob, I think he's got a cool look. He's a big, he's basically just a big, giant, fuzzy mess. I'm okay with the blue blob as my mascot. Yeah. It's better than Gritty.
Yeah, it looks professional. It looks, I mean, it's plain, but it's cute. I can see people going, like, hey, kids, there's Blobby over there. Go hug him or something like that.
Right, whereas Gritty just looks like someone in Philadelphia that, like hangs out late at night. Like, he looks like he's someone that might find you in an alley.
Yeah, it's like, listen, when you get out of the bar, take a right. You take a left, you're going to bump into this stupid mascot.
Don't find Gritty.
You do not want to do that.
Number nine is Brutus the Buckeye. You've seen him a lot if you watch any college football. He's pretty bad. I always thought he was pretty terrible.
It's Freddy Krueger's sweater with a pumpkin head.
And apparently that's like a nut, right? A Buckeye?
I don't know off the top of my head. I never looked it up.
Ooh.
Like even if you look at their, like with the stickers they put on the helmets, it looks like they put leaves on there. So I don't
know. Pot leaf? How many joints?
Yeah.
Number 10, Sammy the Slug. I like him. University of California. He looks straight up like an alien. He looks like someone out of like early Star Wars movie in a cantina.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, it's not the greatest design, but I'm not going to sit back and say it's one of the worst.
No. Still, to me, better than Gritty.
No, there hasn't been any competition. Maybe the
gooey duck
taco. That's about it.
Yeah, the gooey duck might have been, or the angry okra. Those two might be. Maybe we could put a poll up this week on Twitter. Who do you think's better? Like, what mascot would you rather have? Gritty then, you know. What I mean? Then you have Otto the Orange from Syracuse. I don't mind Otto. I don't mind him. He's kind of. He's got a different shape to him. You know, he's round. I'm okay with him.
It's boring, but nothing out of the ordinary, I would say.
Okay. The Billiken outfit looks like it was bought on sale from Costume. This is St. Louis University. That's pretty bad. I don't like his face. It's a little scary.
Yeah, this one is the I bought this from that Halloween costume place that opened up in the old Circuit City / Toys R Us. Mm-hmm. That's what this looks like.
All right. Morty, aka Mortimer McPessel from the St. Louis College of Pharmacy. Even the pharmacy schools have a mascot. Mm. It should just be like average American. It should be the guy who goes to work and hates his family.
Yeah.
but is always there at 7 to pick up his prescription.
Exactly.
That should be. He just looks like a big golden, like, kind of looks like me.
A little bit, yeah. And he seems to be flashing for some reason. I don't know if that has to do something with pharmacies or whatever, but.
Yeah, not sure what he's doing. Doesn't bother me that much. Concordia College, he's a corn. He's a big corn.
That's pretty low on my list, this one, I got to admit. I mean, he's got like a Trump wig. He's got buggy eyes. They don't even like really.
The wig doesn't really help. He's got like random blonde guy hair.
The blue, they have like corn leaves coming out of his arms, and he's wearing a shirt for some reason. This is pretty bad. This is like high school level mascot that should not be a college.
Just a couple more, bro. We got Johnny Poet from Whittier College. He just looks like a patriot. I don't mind him too much.
Johnny Poet sounds like a character that should have been in Goodfellas.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's Tony two times, and Johnny Poet. he doesn't bother me though. His head's big. I think a keto mascot is having a very big head.
Yeah,
like
no doubt.
Like the Devil's mascot, he's pretty cool. He's been around for a long time. NJ Devil, the Mr. Met's got a giant head. Philly Fanatic has a giant head. You know, and then Yankee fans, they all have giant heads.
Exactly. Their inflated egos make it happen.
Whoa. Ichabod from Washburn University is frightening. He's basically just an old man. But ape-like almost.
It's like if somebody hired the Muppets to make a Muppet that looks like a human and it just came out nightmarish.
Yeah, very bad, very bad. Yeah. The Salukis is horrifying. It looks like something you and your man pup friends would wear from Southern Illinois University. It is absolutely atrocious. It is really bad. It looks more like a gargoyle.
Yeah, it's the face is not matching the expression right there. They made some kind of poofy little pup. And try to make it, you know, mean, and it's not working there. Not working.
Well, two more. The boll weevil. So the University of Arkansas at Monticello. Monticello, I don't know. I don't mind him. He's an alien, and obviously he's doing okay because he is surrounded by the cheerleaders.
Yeah, he's got his business going. I mean, I guess it's not bad, but, like, I mean,
he's okay. I mean, he's not terrible.
No, I mean, I guess when you're saying, well, we're the boll weevils, what are you going to do with a mascot design? It's about as good as you're going to get.
And before I looked at this list, number 19, I think, is an awesome mascot, by the way. He looks amazing. Joe Vandal of the University of Ohio. He's like a sexy pirate.
Yeah. I would have a beer with Joe Vandal. That's a guarantee.
He looks like awesome. He's got giant muscles. He's got a great beard and a Viking helmet. Who would ever put him on the worst mascot list?
That's ridiculous and all. Like, if I went out for a beer with him and he tried to take the head off, I'd be like, I'm going to leave this bar if you don't keep that head on. Yeah. That's the only reason why I came here, buddy.
I mean, I like him so much that I'd like to have him on the podcast. Like, I would like to have Joe Vandal. Joe Vandal, to me, on this list is number one. Not that bad. There's a couple others that weren't that bad. There was a couple that pretty bad. But I got to say, if you put Gritty into this article, he's finishing bottom three.
Easily.
That's not good, Mike. That's not good.
I mean, and add to it, you can tell they did work to make that happen, and the result is just god-awful, where you're like, who did you talk to make this design?
Right. Like, a lot of these are, like, old, like small colleges and weird colleges. Like you're talking about a national one of 30 hockey teams. Like, that's what they
came
up with.
Was it 31, actually,
right? Oh, was it 31? Yeah, whatever.
With,
but I'm saying,
Vegas. Yeah.
So they can – I'd rather go no mascot than that.
Yeah, I don't get why you need a mascot. You go to enough Devil games. Does the Devil do much during the game, per se?
He's pretty good. I'm not going to lie. He's pretty good. He does a lot of, like a lot of stuff on the video between, like, you know, stoppages. Mm-hmm. They should just make Lenny Dykstra the Philly mascot.
I think they're just worried they're going to scare off kids.
Who cares about Philly does not care about kids.
I mean, you sell kid stuff, so.
Anyway, Berlo, your mascot's terrific, and I love it because, you know, it's Philly, and I hate the Flyers, so.
Well, we got the best mascot and we got the worst mascot. What are you going to do?
Oh, the best. Give me a break. That weird phallic nose. Mr. Matt is better than the Fanatic.
Oh, dear God. We need this argument again. The guy does literally nothing.
What do you mean he does nothing? He's great.
The only thing I know Mr. Matt for was the one that flipped off a fan that got fired.
Listen, Noah Syndergaard stole the Philly Fanatic's freaking motorcycle.
Yeah, that's part of the bet. That's half the fun.
Philly Fanatic is weird. He's green. He sticks his weird phallic nose in people's faces. No one likes him. No one.
And he took my wife's hat and threw it away from her, which is funny.
He's a jerk off. He's a real jerk off.
Well, you can be that when you're the greatest of all time.
He's not the GOAT. He's not the GOAT. He's not the GOAT. Another survey we should put up on social media.
Yeah.
The GOAT of... who else is there? The monkey from the Suns, the Phoenix Suns. He was pretty. The gorilla.
Is he still active? I haven't even.
Well, when's the last time you heard of the Phoenix Suns basketball team?
Point taken.
They have faded off into, you know, oblivion.
Yeah. Do the Padres still have the chicken, or does he still exist?
The chicken's got to exist. He's got to. But anyway, let's not bore people. Your mascot is awful, and I love it. They should have went with concussed Eric Lindros as the mascot.
He would have the big fat head. It would match with the motif.
His whole gimmick is he's got that like curly hair, but he's always stumbling around the arena.
No, don't go on the ice. You know what happens there.
And Scott Stevens just follows him around in the background, just lurks.
You just hear the announcer, "Oh no, kids, somebody's stalking our mascot."
Scott. yeah, pretty. Or they could have went with like a goalie could have been the mascot, like something a mascot's supposed to be something you don't have. It's imaginary. It doesn't exist. So, like, you guys could have a good goalie.
Yeah, it's been a while. Was it 30 years now?
Yeah.
Working on it.
Yeah.
Hey, hopefully the kid is good that's in the minor league system that LaGreco was talking about. But Lord knows he'll come up. He'll tear an ACL. We'll be back to the drawing board.
Yeah. Well, enough sports. Mike, you got anything before we get out of here?
Well, you say enough sports, and that's what I was about to do.
Oh, more sports, like I said.
Yeah. So, this past NFL weekend, I mean, we had a lot of things that happened. There were some big upsets. Your Giants got a win. Adrian Peterson looking pretty good coming back to Washington. But the big story from the NFL weekend was the Cleveland Browns finally winning a game.
Woo!
And I got some fun facts here about their amazing, quote-unquote, non-winning streak, Cleveland.
I always felt like a little love for Cleveland because, like, when I had, like, Madden, when I actually played Madden back, you know, whatever it was, 15 years ago, I have Madden now, but I usually play for like 4 days and then I don't care. It's probably I think I have like Madden 16 or something like that. Might have been or 15, but anyway, I always used to choose the Browns because I never liked to choose my own team because I always like to choose like the worst team and try to bring them to glory. And the Browns have been the worst team forever.
Exactly, exactly. So here's a few fun little facts about them. In the last 3 years, their last three wins have been from three different quarterbacks.
Wow.
Tyrod Taylor, RG3, and Johnny Manziel.
You could almost even make an argument that their win was two quarterbacks the other night.
You could, but we have to go by starters. But here's what we'll kind of add to that. The Browns have not had the same winning starting quarterback in consecutive wins since 2014, when Brian Hoyer was the starter for their wins on October 6th and October 23rd.
That was a guy they kept around for way too long. I never on the it was like Hoyer's back again. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Since that consecutiveness, the wins were by Johnny Manziel, Josh McCown, back to Johnny Manziel, Robert Griffin, and to Rod Taylor. But the streak continued with Baker Mayfield being named quarterback for next week. Their win was on the three-year anniversary of Johnny Manziel's first win as a starter. The last three wins for the Browns were on different days. They won on Thursday night this past week. Their one win in 2016 was on a Saturday because it was Christmas Eve. They didn't want to play on Christmas. And their last win on a Sunday was December 13th of 2015.
Nice.
The team they beat in 2016 no longer plays in the city. The San Diego Chargers. To give you an idea of how long it's been, we have released 84 episodes between Browns victories.
The current 84. Episode, all right.
84. The current episode out when the Browns last one was episode 130, Daddy's Gonna Kill Ralphie.
Ah, Christmas episode.
Yeah. A.G. Manioli made four appearances on the show in between Browns wins.
That's it? Four?
Four, yeah. Mm-hmm. We actually had a Browns quarterback on in between their wins.
Wow.
And Trent Dilfer.
Yes.
How far was it? Ronda Rousey was still in the UFC. Her last fight was on December 30th of 2016.
Yes, yes.
Tiger Woods was 15 months, just came back to golf after a 15-month layoff.
That was pretty amazing, by the way. Did you see that yesterday, that scene of him walking in the last hole and just like pretty much every – it looked like a movie, like every person walking behind him to go see that last hole. Pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty amazing.
It was historic. To give you some perspective of how far long it was, number one movie was Rogue One, a Star Wars movie. In 2016, that was 3 months – December was 3 months of me before my last comic performance.
Jeez.
My last stand-up was September 21st, 2016. Now, to give perspective of how bad the Browns are, the Patriots lost on Monday. They are 1-2. Cleveland is now 1-1-1, giving them a higher winning percentage. This is the first time that Cleveland has had a better record than the Patriots at any point of the season since week 11 of 2001, where the Cleveland Browns were 5-4 and the New England Patriots were 5-5. You have to go back to week 6 of 2001 for the last time they played the equal amount of games and Cleveland had a better record when they were 4-2 and the Patriots were 3-3. But don't gloat on that because that was the year the Patriots won the Super Bowl. And my final little note, with Baker Mayfield starting this coming week, they will have 30 different starting quarterbacks since 1999. 30. To give you perspective, Scott, on this, can you guess what year, how many years I have to go back for the Redskins' 30th different starting quarterback? Now, we've struggled a little bit with quarterbacks to give you an idea.
I'm going to go with, what was the year? 19... So 30 years. I'm going to go 1994.
1987.
Oof.
I have to go back to Jay Schrader to get 30 different Redskins quarterbacks. Now, your team has been pretty stable.
for with quarterbacks. For a while. Yeah.
So why don't you guess what year I had to go back to get you the Giants' 30th different starting quarterback?
All right. So Eli right away, you know, that's a big chunk of time. It's basically two decades close to. We struggle with the Cannell, the Browns, the stuff like that. So that was probably about three or four before Sims. And so I'm going to go back to 1970.
Further.
1960.
Further.
1952.
Just 1954. I have to go to Bob Clatterbuck.
I love Bob.
Different quarterback.
You know, I got that jersey, my Clatterbuck jersey.
Now, you used to be called the Clatterbuck in high school, if I recall.
Right, one of my many nicknames. Mm-hmm. I would love to see how many goalies the Flyers have had in that time.
2015.
Wow. Well, good for you, Cleveland Browns. Good for you. And you're on the way up because you got some weapons on that team.
Yeah, they look good. They look good. Now, granted, it's the Jets they played, but hey, they almost beat the Saints.
Yeah,
they almost beat the Steelers. They could easily be 3-0 right now. So
that division
keep the
is
hope alive and drink that free Bud Light.
Yeah, that division is nothing special either. So there's wins there for sure. But Berto, let's get the hell out of here. What do you got to promote?
I'm gonna promote me, Scotty, because it's almost October. Michael Berlew random stuff, pumpkin spice, whatever, 31 consecutive days. I got 28 items. I pretty much know what I'm going to do for this month. So I'm going to be ready, and I'm going to try to put a little more fun into all these reviews. And returning tonight on The Walking Dead, as they are starting up in 2 weeks. So I'm going to
I'm
be
so pumped for their premiere.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be putting up a bunch of material up there for the next month, and if I get into it, maybe I'll actually put other stuff up in November. We'll see. But Michael Berlew Random said that's facebook.com/DABURLS721.
That's why no one wants to go there. It's because the Burl's nickname. That's why.
And I've been called it. I don't care what you said. Go promote your thing now.
Join them for November of turkey spiced whatever.
Scott, I don't know what happens in August. Am I supposed to eat tangerines?
Anyway, guys, I'm also going to promote myself for once. I am going to promote this episode will be up Friday, so I got to promote this show. We're trying to sell tickets. I will be at the Archer Hotel in Florham Park with a stacked lineup of Buddha, the comedian, and Craig Lohgren, and Robert Field, and myself. And it is $35. You get a cocktail hour, and you get a drink included, cash bar available, 7:30 to 9:00 comedy show. It should be fun. I am doing 20 minutes that night, so if you're coming... Right, you get to see at least a lot of me. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Walk up to Scott, ask him if he's done anything in the last 3 weeks. He says no, walk out of the hotel.
Yeah, yeah. And then I guess I will also promote us, guys. Verbal Shenanigans, please, if you enjoyed what you heard, have a listen, leave a review on iTunes. That helps us populate and all that fun stuff. And most of all, go buy Palms, the new album from Thrice, or go listen to it on Spotify. It is pretty damn good, I'm not going to lie. Getting into it more and more as it goes on. Thank you, Riley. Thank you, Ed. And thank you, Mike. Life is
no
fun.
No problem. I didn't know I joined Thrice, but it'll be cool.
Yeah. Well, if you were to join Thrice, they're like, look, we need you to join. What instrument would you like have to... figure
tambourine.
Out. All right, the tambourine.
So I would just go out there and tambourine the living crap out of all of these songs.
All right, so I'm going to put up, we had the bassist, drummer, and the tambourine player of Thrice on this episode. Guys, good night. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Bye-bye.
See ya.